Thanks for listening to the Best of Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
This is the Best of the Herd with Colin Cowherd on Fox Sports Radio.
Ah, here we go, live in Los Angeles on a Wednesday. It's The Herd, wherever you may be and however you may be listening. iHeartRadio, Fox Sports Radio, FS1, brought to you by Jersey Mike Subs. Be a sub above. Loaded today. We have a short week. This is our final day of the week. Greg Cosell will be on our show today. Joel Klatt will be on our show today. College football rounding into shape. And Joy Taylor is joining me. Joy will have a story in about 20 minutes, 25 minutes. Which I didn't know existed as a story. I'd never heard of it. I had no idea. And I read my newspapers every day. It is a story that fascinates me that I don't think anybody's talking about. And Joy is going to have it in 25 minutes.
It's not my favorite Google search. I will say that.
That's funny. Jerry Jones of the Cowboys, as he's aged, has become more pragmatic. He's getting older. His Super Bowls are hard to come by. Jerry Jones has gotten pragmatic. Jalen Smith, he put his arms around Jalen Smith. Remember the Notre Dame kid? He was hurt. And this season, he just cut him. Whoa. Jerry loves his players. Not that much. He wants to win games. Micah Parsons is better. And don't be surprised if Jerry Jones boots star receiver Amari Cooper after the season. Amari Cooper can't play this week. He didn't get vaccinated. You know, we always bang on quarterbacks like Tua. Tua's not available. Tua's always hurt. Carson Wentz a couple years ago is always hurt. Yeah, 20 million wide receivers who could be available and didn't get vaccinated, they have to be available too. Jerry Jones on Dallas Radio is hot about it.
The facts are, it is a wee thing when you walk into the locker room. But this is a classic case of how it can impact a team when people are, at the end of the day, this is not individual, it is team. You cannot win anything individually. So all of that are statements that I know everybody has heard to their blue in the face. But the point is that this popped us. This did pop us.
Let's be honest about this. Dallas crushed Atlanta. They were 7-2, the number 3 seed, had momentum, go to Kansas City, and once CeeDee Lamb got a concussion at half, they were down to Michael Gallup and a bunch of no-names. They could have really used Amari Cooper. I mean, it was kind of surprising. The Cowboys only lost 19-9. And Dak, under pressure, needed his star veteran A receiver. Not A receiver, a $20 million receiver. So now Dallas, only a touchdown favorite at home against the Raiders, is now a 4 seed. They've lost their momentum. CeeDee Lamb, concussion. Zeke's beat up. Tyron Smith is week to week. And 3 straight road games after Thanksgiving hosting the Raiders. 3 straight roadies. That doesn't happen much in the NFL. They're all coming up. 2 against great defenses. So Michael Irvin, by the way, still very close to Jerry Jones, had this to say about it.
Absolutely hot about it. Are you joking? I got a guy named Cedric Wilson catching passes who makes $2 million, and a guy named Noah Brown catching passes who makes $1 million, and I got a guy that makes $21 million on the bench or at home not playing. It's crazy.
By the way, I wouldn't be shocked if Jerry texted Michael and said, you're free to take some swings at this. Like when COVID hit, the rule I had was quarterbacks got to get vaccinated because teams don't carry 6 and 7. That's the first thing. Like quarterbacks, get vaccinated. Be a team player. Get off your Reddit board. Get vaccinated. But the second thing to think about is this is the NFL. People get tackled. We're in late November. Teams are falling apart. And all that momentum Dallas had, and you can hear it in Jerry's voice, could have been wasted. Because a nice kid didn't get vaccinated. And if CeeDee Lamb isn't ready to go against the Raiders, Dallas has never been as good. Dak has never been as good when he doesn't have Amari Cooper. It's a team game. Whether or not you think you should be vaccinated, you shouldn't. When you're part of a collective in the NFL, where in November every year teams start to fall apart, don't kid yourself. That game against the Chiefs was winnable with Amari, and this one now without Amari is absolutely losable. Momentum matters. You could hear it in Jerry's voice. He got rid of Jalen Smith. Don't think he'll forget this. America loves redemption stories. I remember the day that LeBron, the letter was dropped. He was going back to Cleveland. And I remember that day of doing radio, and it was like radio and TV simulcast. I'm like, wow, this is big. And it was like emotional. People love redemption stories. And I'll give you another redemption story that's in the Midwest. It's called the Big Ten. James Franklin at Penn State has said, I'm not going to LSU or USC. I'm going to sign a 10-year deal at Penn State. Mel Tucker was a leading candidate at LSU. I'm going to stay at Michigan State. 8 to 10 years ago, this conference was Ohio State and a mess. You got Brady Hoke at Michigan. Michigan State was playing Alabama in like playoff games and getting routed. It was embarrassing. The conference, even people who had played there and now are noteworthy broadcasters, were lamenting the Big Ten. But as the Big 12, the Pac-12, and the ACC get worse every year and appear to be shrinking, the SEC, the number one revenue conference, and the Big Ten, the number two revenue conference, that is the varsity in college football. I live in Los Angeles. I grew up with a Pac-12. Hell, half the time I can't even find the Pac-12 network. The stadiums are half full. There's just too many professional sports options on the West Coast. Silicon Valley has made Los Angeles unaffordable for assistant coaches. There's a real redemption story going on in football, and it all starts with passion. I've said this before. I root for people who deeply care about things. The South loves college football. So I think the sport's too insular, but it makes me happy when Southern college football teams win because I used to live around the South in Tampa, and those Winnebagos arrive Wednesday at the stadium, and they sit there until Sunday morning, and they drive home. The Big Ten felt like a dying, dead conference years ago, and now there are two hot coaches on the market. We're staying. Harbaugh 1 year ago. A lot of people had him up for NFL jobs. You don't think Harbaugh could get an NFL job? He got to the Super Bowl with the Niners. He said, no, I'll rework my contract, take less to stay at Michigan. And when you watch Big Ten games and you watch Wisconsin at home or Michigan State or Michigan or Ohio State or Iowa, Penn State, when you watch these games, you can sense the passion. The stadiums are jammed. The rivalries are intense. Watch Michigan, Ohio State this weekend. There's nothing out west that looks like it, and I'm a guy from out west who grew up with a Pac-12. It is a real redemption story, and it was all led, what it was really led by, was the fans. I mean, why is the Pac-10 shrinking? Watch the games. Like, Oregon's one of the only places that's rocking every weekend. Watch the ACC. I see empty stands all over the conference. But when I watch the Big Ten, Iowa sold out, Wisconsin sold out, Michigan State, Michigan, Ohio State, Nebraska. The fans are a big part of this. As everybody else's revenue shrinks, those revenues grow. And even Northwestern, the private school, right? The academic power has amazing new facilities. Stanford, the West Coast academic football power, in the tank. So congratulations. It's a great redemption story. And it's driven by the fans, just like the SEC is. Fans often think they don't have power. They do. The SEC, it matters more. And the Big Ten, in the last 8 to 10 years, Mel Tucker staying, Jim Harbaugh staying and reworking his contract. And by the way, they're going to win 10 games this year, probably. And James Franklin staying. He could have lived near the beach in Los Angeles. He could have been down in New Orleans and Baton Rouge, great fun party city. No, I'm going to stay in rural Pennsylvania. It's a great story. It really is. And if you watch the games, you see why. It looks like football matters in the Big Ten. And you'll see it this weekend. Big noon kickoff ratings through the roof. Stadiums jammed. Watch Michigan, Ohio State. You don't see that in like the other conferences except the SEC.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
The Chicago Bears situation with Matt Nagy. Tomorrow, the Bears. Andy Dalton will start. Justin Fields is hurt. We'll take on the abysmal Lions. And the situation with Matt Nagy. Listen, the Raiders are going to hire a new coach. We know that. And the Bears are. It's a matter of if not when he gets fired. Yesterday, he met with ownership before a second walkthrough with the team. He then canceled the rest of his meetings. The locker room, according to reliable Chicago newspaper people, the locker room is asking questions. There's no clarity. It's just a mess. And so Matt Nagy, this is probably his last game, win or lose. So the question becomes, is the Bears a good job? So it's interesting because there's three types of rebuilds in the NFL. There's the we need everything, including a quarterback. That's Houston. Those are tough jobs. There's, we don't need anything but a quarterback. That's Denver. That's a winning roster today. That was Tampa. Like, we got everything. We just have a quarterback. Those are really good jobs, but it's hard to find a quarterback. And the third one is where Chicago is at. We think we have the quarterback, and we have some nice pieces, but our current GM gives up draft picks, up against the cap. We had to get rid of players because apparently we're using a bank and we don't have a credit line, unlike the Rams, who can pay two quarterbacks and they're still one of the best teams in the league. The Bears' job has actually got many things going for it. Number one, it's an offensive league. This is really a great year for young offensive coordinators to graduate to head coach. It's a really good year in the league. You have a top defensive coordinator with Indy. You've got 3 to 4 really good offensive coordinators. That's the key. It's a great year to be looking for a young coach. The second thing is, it looks like they have their quarterback in Justin Fields, and next year he won't be battling Andy Dalton for snaps. They will know probably very soon, once he gets his ribs back in shape, this is going to be his franchise for at least minimum the next 3 years, unless he fails. And the third thing is, their running back, wide receiver, tight end talent is pretty good. The Bears have two issues. The offensive line, it's not like Jacksonville bad or the New York Giants bad or Atlanta bad. It's ranked like 18th, 19th, 20th. You could solve it in the draft. The other issue is they've only got 4 draft picks, but they have some capable defensive players who are getting old and expensive. You could move and get picks. This organization just needs, at the top, coach and GM, smart, young, capable people. This is a wildly passionate fan base. Historically, they've never fired a coach in season. So say what you want about the Chicago Bears, but they've given a lot of coaches an extra year. This is not an offensive line that is not fixable. The Chargers fix their offensive line because they have a good GM in one off season. The Bears can. They've got to move some old defensive pieces, get more draft picks, hit on their first 2 to 3 picks. And if Justin Fields can play, it's a good football team. It's a good football team. Detroit is a long way off. Minnesota, if Mike Zimmer doesn't win down the stretch, will have a whole new staff in with Kirk Cousins. And Aaron Rodgers, he could leave too. So I don't think, listen, if you have the quarterback, Denver, John Elway checked out in 1998. 23 years later, Denver has only been good at quarterback when they rented Peyton Manning. And Dan Marino left in 1999. That's 22 years, and they still can't get it right. So of all the rebuilds out there, there's an argument to be made. The best rebuild, because it's so hard to find a quarterback, right? You get about 1.5 a year in the NFL, find a great quarterback. The best kind of rebuild is we've got our quarterback. We've got some good skill people. We just got to get better in the front office and fix our own line. That is incredibly solvable in one off season.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
Hey, this is Jason McIntyre. Join me every weekday morning on my podcast, Straight Fire with Jason McIntyre. This isn't your typical sports pod pushing the same tired narratives down your throat every day. Straight Fire gives you honest opinions on all the biggest sports headlines, accurate stats to help you win big at the sportsbook, and all the best guests. Do yourself a favor and listen to Straight Fire with Jason McIntyre on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
So we were saying, on average in the NFL, seven coaches are replaced every year. We know the Raiders are going to hire a coach, so I'm not going to include them in this. We know that's true. And we know Matt Nagy's in big trouble, and will not. Let's not argue it. It's not going to work. So, you know, the guy behind me, Pete Carroll, is one of them. There are seven coaches that I think are – that people will talk about things. So I'm going to give – we'll do a little game here. We'll call on the plane or retain. Would I retain you and keep you? And I can make arguments to keep you, or is it time to put you on a plane and we're going another direction? So let's just play this game, and you tell me if I'm wrong on this, but I'll give you my reasons for all of them.
Okay, no pun intended. The Jets head coach, Robert Saleh.
I think it's a whiff. I'd put him on a plane. I think they whiffed. I think in a division with four defensive coaches, his defense is the only one that keeps getting worse. In an offensive league, he has no connection to Zach Wilson, who clearly doesn't listen to him because he's had to publicly criticize him twice about his interceptions. The Jets allow – their defense is not as bad as this. In fact, there have been moments over the last several years where we like their defensive line. I think Robert Saleh was a miss. I had questions going in. I think Zach Wilson is harder than average to coach. There's some Aaron Rodgers there. I think they whiffed. I think they missed.
Lions head coach Dan Campbell.
I would actually retain. They play really hard. They should have a win or two. They lost to the Ravens on a 60-yard kick. They had the Steelers beat. The other thing is they have the number one pick. I think they should stay with Goff for a year. I think I could argue trade that down and get multiple picks. They've got some good young offensive players. Five of their 10 games have been decided by one possession. They play their butts off. And even though I didn't like his introductory press conference, the effort is totally there. They've been in half their games. They're not gifted enough to win those close games.
Vikings head coach Mike Zimmer.
I think he's a great coach. I would retain him. In four of his 7 years, he's had a winning record. And that's in a division where you got to play Aaron Rodgers twice. Here's the other thing about Zimmer. As a defensive coach, how does he connect with his quarterback? Like Robert Saleh and Zach Wilson don't work. Kirk Cousins has, I think, a top three passer rating in the league. Kirk Cousins under Zimmer has been terrific. It's the best Kirk Cousins. I think Mike Zimmer's a top 10 NFL coach. They've been to the playoffs before. I think they're a playoff team this year. And I do think he's a tad conservative for my taste, but some of that pays off with Kirk Cousins. He just doesn't want to put him in a place to fail.
How about the Broncos head coach Vic Fangio?
I don't think he's terrible, but I'd put him on a plane. Again, in that division where I got Andy Reid and I've got all these great quarterbacks, is he going to be the guy, even if he gets the young quarterback, do you want him guiding him? It's a really good year for offensive coordinators to get head jobs. And if I get a young quarterback, I'd rather have a Sean McVay or a Kyle Shanahan or a young offensive coach. No Bronco quarterback has had a winning record under him. Drew Locke, Teddy Bridgewater, Brandon Allen, or Joe Flacco, and he's won 40% of his games, and the division, to me, is only getting better.
Well, they just fired their offensive coordinator, the Giants head coach, Joe Judge.
I would retain him for one more year. I think the team plays hard. He can't get his offense healthy. Saquon Barkley can't stay healthy. I don't think he has a great general manager. I will tend to defend a coach when I don't think he has the quarterback. Belichick got fired when he couldn't get the quarterback right. But they're in a lot of games. You can argue because he was sort of a no-name hire, he didn't assemble the greatest staff. But I think they play generally really hard, and they listen to him. And I just think he's got to get a better GM and a quarterback. So I would retain him for another year.
The Miami Dolphins coach, Brian Flores.
I don't even think this is an argument. I don't understand the discussion. I would totally retain him. Listen, first of all, they ended the year last year playing very good football with Ryan Fitzpatrick and Tua, and they're on a three-game winning streak with Tua. And I think he gets the most out of Tua. I think he does as good a job as you can do with a smaller quarterback with an average arm that's not that athletic. The defense remains very good. They doubled their win total in their second year under Brian Flores. So I don't understand the arguments here. He's doing as well as you can do. If you go back to his last... You know, take the second half of last year and the beginning of this year when his quarterback has been upright, either Fitzpatrick or Tua, they can win games.
All right, the guy behind you, Seahawks head coach Pete Carroll.
He's had a great career, but I think it's over. I'd put him on a plane. He has too much power. The downside to a power grab is you get the responsibility. They're a mess. His defense feels outdated. I've had multiple Seahawks players tell me they think the offense is outdated. They can't now mesh their running and passing game. Russell Wilson's not a big fan. We know that. The offensive line is, outside of Dwayne Brown and maybe one of their guards, kind of a rebuild. The secondary is a rebuild. I think Pete's fingerprints were all over the Jamal Adams move, which now looks egregious. I mean, they're literally 30th in offense, 31st in defense. He'd been fired twice before in the NFL. There are arguments to be made that his kind of rah-rah, optimistic, 24-7, you know, gum-chewing, frenetic pace can wear players out. I think they're in a rebuild, and I think he's been the architect of this roster over the last three or four. He got all the credit early on his draft picks, right? It was all Pete knowing personnel. Well, then he's responsible now, and I think it's a rebuild. I'd trade Bobby Wagner. I'd think about moving everybody but Russell Wilson and Dwayne Brown, and there you go. But I think the Robert Saleh one, people will go, whoa, it's been a year. We've seen this before where you hire a coach in Arizona and you just think it just doesn't work. He was a coordinator. He's a defensive guy. It just doesn't work. And when Zach Wilson, you got to get that right now because you didn't get Darnold right. You got to get Zach Wilson right. Who do you think gives you the best opportunity to get Zach Wilson right? An offensive-leaning coach, a Lincoln Riley, you know, Brian Kelly at Notre Dame, an offensive-leaning guy, or a young defensive guy who we don't even know if he's anything more than a good coordinator?
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
That's a hot one.
Let's blaze it up.
Fire it up.
It's Collins Blazing Fire. Raiders and Cowboys.
You know, I take one big favorite a week. I'll take the Cowboys minus 7.5. Tyron Smith, ankle. He's going to start at left tackle. Dak at home with Tyron Smith wins most of his games. CeeDee Lamb practiced today. He's probably back with Michael Gallup and Cedric Wilson. Dak Prescott at home this year has been a different quarterback with 118 passer rating off a disappointing loss. And right now the Raiders have everything from tragedy to chaos to an interim coach. They are now converting in the last 2 weeks 12% of third downs. This is a free-fall Raider team. Dallas gets healthy and wins 30-20, swallow the points.
Steelers at Bengals.
I like to take Mike Tomlin as an underdog. He may be the NFL's best underdog coach. I'll take the Steelers and the points here. By the way, they get very healthy. TJ Watt's back. Joe Hayden's back. Minka Fitzpatrick is back. By the way, they are 0-4 when TJ Watt doesn't play. He is the MVP of this team. And Big Ben in the last five games is actually, because of Najee Harris and that young offensive line improving, Big Ben's played well. Last five games, 9 touchdowns, no picks. In fact, he's the only starting quarterback in the league without a pick in the last five games. So I think Pittsburgh wins straight out. Take the points, 26-24.
Jets at Texans.
I like the Texans minus 2.5. When Tyrod Taylor is playing quarterback, they don't make a ton of mistakes. He can run for touchdowns. He can pass for him. They're 2-1 when he plays. I think they're playing really hard. They're in a lot of their games. And I think they're going to beat the Jets. I would take the Texans. By the way, the Jets defense, this team is so bad defensively. They're last in virtually everything. They're allowing quarterbacks to have 108 passer rating. And again, Tyrod Taylor has 6 touchdowns this year. Pass for 3s, rush for 3. Zach Wilson will be the third different quarterback in 3 weeks. There is no continuity in games. I'm going to take Houston to win and cover the spread 30-23.
Buccaneers at Colts.
I like the Colts at home getting a field goal. Brady's not the same quarterback since he arrived in Tampa on the road. He's great at home. He has the comfort. He moved his family. He needs that comfort at home. Didn't used to be the case. He's not been a good road quarterback. And by the way, the Colts take the ball away and don't give it up. They lead the NFL in turnover differential, and Brady has had a little interception problem. Carson Wentz, 97 passer rating this year, and it's getting better because Jonathan Taylor is number one in virtually every running back data point, right? We thought Buffalo's defense was great. He ran through it. The Bucs are coming off a short week. Also, Antonio Brown may not play, and they are 2-3 without AB this year. Vitavia's hurt. Their guard, Ali Marpet, excellent, is hurt. I got Indianapolis winning the game outright, 27-21.
Chargers at Broncos.
My favorite bet of the week. Like it, I love it. Broncos plus 2.5. Listen, the Chargers have a bad defense, and Denver is going to run the football and control time of possession. And Denver's held their opponents under 20 three of their last four games. The Broncos defense, top three scoring defense in the league. Bridgewater doesn't make mistakes. Three games without a pick. And the Chargers can't defend the run. They've not won consecutive games since week 4 and 5. There are certain things in this league you got to do. Got to be able to run the football at some point. Now that Pittsburgh is, oh, it's a different team. And you got to stop the run. Or you sit in the sidelines and watch the other offense. So Justin Herbert, he'll win, he'll lose. He'll win, he'll lose. This feels a lot like, to me, the Minnesota game where Justin Herbert's going to end up watching a lot of this. I'm going to take Denver straight out to win it 28-24 over a team I love watching play. They're just not a great team yet, the Chargers. So a couple of favorites and three underdogs. Favorite Cowboys, favorite Texans, and then I'll take the Steelers points, the Colts points, and the Broncos with points. I know, everybody thinks I like the Chargers. I bet against them all year. I've had great success.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
So I think the two games that really are fascinating this weekend are Brady goes to Indy to take on Carson Wentz, and the Colts just hammered Buffalo. And then the other game is the Rams go to Lambeau to take on Green Bay. And Carson Wentz and Matt Stafford were the two big moves, quarterback moves in the offseason. But for Wentz, it's funny about momentum. Wentz had the COVID protocol, right? He was unvaccinated. He was near somebody. Then he got hurt. And the Colts' offensive line was a bit of a mess in September. And so Wentz didn't get off to a particularly good start. Plus, a lot of people were doubting that he was worth the money and worth the acquisition, right? So that was the story. And so people really haven't paid attention to what Wentz is doing because they got off to the slow start. Now, Stafford goes to the Rams. McVay showers him with praise. SoFi Stadium finally has fans. He gets a big win over Brady and the Bears early. And it's seen as a huge success. But this morning, Wentz has 18 touchdowns, 3 picks, a 97 passer rating, and 63% completion percentage. And it's getting better because he's now, those numbers include an ugly September. He has 2 ugly losses, but he has an above average offensive line, I think better than Stafford's. And Stafford got off to this praise-filled start, but he has 24 touchdowns and 8 picks, also 2 ugly losses, good passer rating, 67% completions. But if Wentz beats Brady, he'll be 7-5 with a better running game than Stafford, a better offensive line than Stafford, and an easier division. And if Stafford loses against the Packers, and it's close, I mean, this is a pick'em game, he's 7-4 without the offensive line or running game and basically trying to make OBJ work. Because I saw a story yesterday where Sean McVay said, quote, yeah, the OBJ thing is a work in progress. So this weekend's interesting. We viewed it because of the start by Wentz and the criticism of the move. It's been spotty. It hasn't been spotty. He's been playing great. And Stafford got all the praise early, but their last two games have been a mess. And so we could be looking at this weekend. Wentz has the better team, the better defense, the better momentum, the better running game, the better O-line, easier division, and Stafford's in trouble. But this story's taken a real pivot because we kind of didn't like the Wentz move. We did, but most didn't like it. And it was so ugly to start, we just buried him. Colts are really close to being one of the hotter teams in the league now. They're playing really good football. I just don't think the gap. Wentz is a bigger, more physical athlete than Stafford. Stafford's a prettier thrower of the football. It just looks prettier. McVay's clever. I don't think there's a big gap. I don't think the gap is nearly as pronounced as people think. Stafford's better. I think it's fairly close. And it'll be closer after this weekend because if the If Aaron plays bad toe and they get a couple of guys back, I think the Rams could lose.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
One of our favorites, Greg Cosell, 42 years at NFL Film. If you bet football, play fantasy football, or just want to get smarter. All right, the first one, it feels like it's pretty obvious. I watched the Cowboys struggle, and my takeaway was they could have used Amari Cooper, and they couldn't block Chris Jones. That's what the game felt like. So you tell me, offense dried up for Dallas. Was it that complex? What happened?
You know, it's really interesting. I was about halfway through that tape, which, of course, was the first half, and I kept saying to myself, I feel like they're playing this game to protect their offensive line as opposed to being proactive and attacking. They obviously played with Steele at left tackle. Once again, Terrence Steele. He played really well at right tackle. He's really had a hard time at left tackle. They played McGovern at left guard. He had a hard time. They never got into any rhythm offensively. They did not commit to running the ball. Maybe the score, which was never really ahead of them, but maybe they just felt being behind changed the flow of the game. But they didn't attack at all in the pass game at the intermediate and deeper levels. So there was just no feel or flow to the Cowboy offense. And I think they played to try to protect their offensive line.
Yeah. You know, later that night, I watched the Chargers Steelers, and, you know, the Chargers have given away more wins than any team in the last decade, I would argue. But Herbert is such a special player. And we're always hyper, on, at least I am, on these young quarterbacks, because you want them to succeed, because football's better when you have good quarterbacks. What do you make of Herbert and his growth? Because he's still, you know, his arc is still growing. He's still a kid.
I would say a couple things about Herbert. Number one is that he has a rhythmic feel to his game. The ball comes out within the structure and timing of the play. You rarely see him, Colin, get stuck in the pocket where it doesn't seem as if he has a throw. He's a quick processor. He's a quick decision maker. And I would also say that he's a desirable combination of pocket efficiency and special throwing talent, both from the pocket and outside the pocket. The last thing is he's a power thrower with precise ball location, and that's rare. Troy Aikman was like that. Carson Palmer was like that. There's not a lot of quarterbacks who are power throwers who can really drive the ball that also can throw with precise ball location.
Yeah, he really is special to watch. So, I mean, listen, I've said this. There's some power dynamics in the Seahawks organization. I think they honestly, Greg, they need to move some pieces. I don't think it's a very good roster. I don't think their defense schematically or in personnel is very good on the back end. You watch Russell Wilson. What do you make of this offense? Is it O-line? Is it Russ? Is it banged up running backs? What is it?
Well, I think ultimately, and again, this is a conversation I've had with a lot of people over the last number of years. The Seahawks clearly want to establish continuity and stability by running the football. Now, whether that is a Pete Carroll mandate or whether they believe that's the best way to play offense, given Russell Wilson being the quarterback, we don't know the answer to that, because there's a definite belief, obviously, that Russell Wilson is a great player and that just put the ball in his hands and let him play. But they do not play like that, Colin, and they've never really played like that. And Wilson came into the league on a team that had a big-time defense and a big-time running back. So they've never really handed the reins to Russell Wilson for any long period of time. So either, as I said, either Pete Carroll, who I'm sure you know, I don't really know Pete Carroll, either Pete Carroll has a firm belief that this is the way you play, or they don't believe Russell Wilson is that kind of lead quarterback.
Yeah, and maybe that's why Russ is unhappy. So Jalen Hurts maybe doesn't throw the most beautiful deep ball, but all I know is people are struggling. He's super productive. They had another big Sunday. They could have scored more points, and the Saints' defense is one with a lot of really good players. And what do you make of what is Philadelphia doing over the last 3 or 4 weeks with Jalen Hurts?
Well, it's really the last 2 weeks. In fact, the first 5-6 weeks, they did the same thing in terms of putting him in the gun. They just never ran it. What they've done the last 2 weeks is it's a high percentage shotgun offense. Hurts is the foundation of a multiple run game. It's very similar to what the Ravens do with Lamar Jackson. Conceptually and tactically, it's very similar. It's a run-based offense. Hurts is the foundation because anytime he's in the gun, which is almost every snap, you have the zone read element that's available to you, and that impacts how the defense plays. They've started to add more motion concepts. That also is impacting the defense. The pass game is just core concepts with defined reads and the occasional shot play. This is an offense built on the run game right now.
Yeah. So Buffalo is spiraling, and Josh Allen's numbers have regressed. At times, they don't feel like they commit to the run. In the draft, they attack the offensive line, so they didn't have a ton of confidence in it. If you could boil it down to a couple of things, what does the film say that is happening to Buffalo's offense right now?
A couple of things, which the film, it jumps out. No viable run game. No commitment to it whatsoever. An O-line that's not good enough in pass protection to throw the ball as often as they want to.
Yeah.
And no explosive plays in the pass game. If you can't run the ball, and you, which means you can't sustain offense, you have to be able to make explosive plays in the pass game. Last year they did. This year they're not. It's very difficult to execute a sustaining offense with the only dimension being the pass. And when you don't have a viable run game and your O-line can't protect well enough, snap after snap, it's just too hard. So what you're asking now is Josh Allen has to be special every play, every game, or we cannot win.
Yeah, that's not a great solution. It's very obvious they don't pass block terribly well up front. So
no, they do not.
So Brady's always been a creature of habit. His sleep, he goes to bed at the exact same time. And so in New England, when he left to Tampa, this is my theory, he got out of his habits. It was a new city, a new house, a new staff. And so he has been looking for comfort and habits in Tampa. What do I mean? He's very good at home. He has not been a particularly good road quarterback. And I think for a guy that's a kind of a habit-forming guy, all this move to Tampa, the new staff, the new playbook, the new teammates, he really likes playing home games. That's why the Super Bowl at home was a big edge. Now he's on the road again, where he has not been the same quarterback. But the interesting matchup to me this week is Jonathan Taylor running against the Buccaneers' run defense, which is it's been difficult to move that line. How does that Colts run game and Taylor match up against the Bucs front defensively?
So then it comes down to schematics and tactics, because you're right. You probably can't just line up and move that D line. Not many people have. So you get into tactics now. Last week, we saw them do something that it's called a wham trap concept. It's very effective event against four-man fronts. What it really does is it encourages defensive linemen to shoot gaps, and then they get blocked by people who they don't expect to be blocked by. So it comes down to schematics, because as I said, you're probably not just going to move them, but I think the Colts, obviously the foundation of their offense is running the ball right now. Although Carson Wentz has played well and has made good throws, this will be a very intriguing matchup in terms of the way the Colts choose to play, because we know that the secondary for the Bucs has been certainly vulnerable.
Okay. Vikings beat the Packers. Green Bay was beat up. Minnesota is the only team in the league that has led every opponent by at least 7 points at one point. Are they special? Is it Zimmer? Is it Kirk Cousins? What do you see with the Vikings? Because they're now we got a couple of back-to-back wins. It's a pretty interesting team.
Yeah, I mean, I think their pass game is probably better than people think. Cousins is one of those guys that in many people's minds, Colin, as you know, the narrative's already been written. He's a certain kind of player, and that's all he is. But say what you want, he's a very productive and efficient player. He doesn't throw interceptions. They're very efficient throwing the ball. I'm continually amazed by how good Justin Jefferson is. I was wrong about him coming out. I thought he'd be a nice player and probably a slot player. He's so much more than that. He is such a refined, efficient, subtle route runner. And I'll tell you what, with his strides, and it's not as if he's 6'4", but his stride length allows him to get vertical. So you know, I think that this is a very efficient offense with big play ability. And say what you want about Kirk Cousins, he does not turn it over. He does not throw interceptions. Now, having said that, he always has a game where it seems like he throws two or three. Maybe that's coming. I don't know. But overall, if you go back and look at maybe his last 25, 30 games, he's been incredibly efficient.
Yeah. By the way, Aaron Donald, Jalen Ramsey, Rams defense, how are they going to match up at Lambeau bye week against Aaron Rodgers, who's got a bad toe and he's missing a left tackle and a running back? How do they match up?
Well, the Rams are a zone-heavy team. They play one of the lowest percentages of man coverage in the NFL. So Jalen Ramsey is not a matchup man corner. They do not use him that way. Now, having said that, will there be snaps when he is on Davante Adams? Yes, but they don't use him as, hey, you got him, that's your guy for the game. They're very zone-based. They play more cover four, which is four across, than any team in the NFL. As I said, they play very little pure man coverage. So I think they present defined reads and throws for Aaron Rodgers. I think there'll be opportunities for Rodgers.
Finally, let's get into New England. The defense for New England, it's just amazing to me. I always think, why doesn't everybody do this? It's never the best personnel. You never beat them over the top. I mean, you really don't. They make you work for everything. You get no freebies. Are they the best defense in the league?
I mean, that's hard to say, but they're a unique defense, and the fact that their base defense is three safeties. They don't really play a true base defense. They play big nickel with three safeties, and you could make the argument that two overlooked players on their defense who may be the key to their defense and allows them to be what they are the safeties Kyle Duggar and Adrian Phillips. They are so important to that defense because they can play both in the box and be effective like linebackers and at times play in the back end. And Duggar matches up to tight ends. And they're starting to get really good play from the rookie out of Alabama, Barmore, who's starting to show inside pass rush ability to win one-on-one.
Yep.
And, of course, they've got Matthew Judon, who's showing the edge ability. So they're a really interesting defense to watch. They don't play as much man coverage as they used to. Belichick is doing some different things, but they're really, really good.
Yeah, and give us, you got your Patriots is the play of the week, right?
Yeah, well, we didn't do a play this week as far as a breakdown, but I will say this. Offensively, they're a running football team, Colin. You know, everybody talks about Mac Jones, and Mac Jones has done very well. I mean, there's no question that that's inarguable. But this team is among the league leaders in rushing attempts and rushing yards, and they do it old school. They put Mac Jones under center. They're not a shotgun running team. And don't forget, their rushing yards are not aided by Mac Jones. He's no factor in the run game. So they line up, and they come at you and run the ball. In many ways, they're an old school team. Run game, defense, efficient quarterback.
Yeah.
That's what the Patriots are. They don't get a lot of big plays in the pass game.
Yeah. No, I'll tell you what, you start looking around, Buffalo's reeling, Baltimore's hit and miss, Cleveland now, the wheels have come off, Kansas City's not quite right offensively. You look around.
Yeah.
And yeah, they match up with a lot of people because nobody's going to get in the 30s on them if they play defense like this. Greg Cosell, happy Thanksgiving, Greg.
Thanks, Colin. You too. Appreciate it.